I'm happy. We bought furniture. Here comes a letter from Fort Benjamin Harris telling me to come up and meet the board for regular commission. I said to the wife, I said, I'm not going back. I says, we're home now. I says, we're going to stay home.
So at this point, you had been officially discharged, right?
Do I? Not?
You had been officially discharged at that point?
Yeah, well, it was really, I had some time coming at it. It wound up being January of 47 when I finally had the discharge. I think I was in those.
But up to that point, your service was continuous.
Yeah, right.
Even though it wasn't a regular commission.
Yeah, right. At that point. Yeah, yeah. So you were commissioned in the reserves. Mm-hmm. So anyway, shortly after that, I get a letter from United Airlines. Now, all this time I'm out there, United Airlines, because of combat areas, they were just allowed to fly from California to Hawaii and back. So here they are, they give them a contract to fly the whole run like the Air Force was doing. Mm-hmm. They had no bio experience. So they must have gone back through the records. They pulled my name out of the records, so they send me this thing, offer me a job flying with the United Airlines. And it sounded like a pretty good deal. It was per diem and so much and this and that, and the pay, forget the exact pay, whatever it was. So anyway, I told the wife, I said, nah, I'm not going to get back. I said, if I get back at all, it's going to be in the Air Force. I turned them down already, so I'm not going back with United. So I stayed in the reserves. And I was in the reserves until July of 1955. And in 19, I think a little bit before that, I get a letter. And they had something they called ROPA. It was Reserve Officer's Promotion. And I was up for promotion from major to lieutenant colonel. So he says, what they're gonna do, they says, they pass me over, but you get one more shot at it. We'll send you another letter. They'll either promote you or they'll leave you out. I said to the wife, they're not gonna promote me to lieutenant colonel. I said, aren't these conditions and everything? So I get the final letter, then it was in July of 55. And they relieved me from duty then on that date. So that's when I finally was relieved from
service.
And your
service was continuous then, until then a short break?
Until that time, you mean?
Right.
All the way through until that time, yeah.
Okay.
I'd go to meetings over at the river in the back of the government building. They had something we'd go once a week or something like that. And they had some guy there. It seemed like his name was Hailstorm. Hailstorm or Hailstone, something like that. He was a professor at Xavier University. And he'd have classes over there, and he'd have intelligence briefings, and he'd keep us up to date on everything that was going on, you know. And then in the meantime, when I was in the reserves, I was offered to up at, where's the place up by Columbus, Will? There's a place up there, I'm trying to think, and they were flying, and they made me an offer there to fly up there, but I couldn't do it because it was weekends. And you flew like one weekend a month, and then you, 2 weeks you went a year to fly to Europe and that, and do all that, and I was offered that, and I couldn't do that because of the job I had. So I didn't do that. Now that was during that time that I was going to all those reserve meetings. It seems like Wilmington. Is there a Wilmington?
Is that what later became Rickenbacker Air Force Base?
I don't know. It seems like it was Wilmington. It was
Columbus, up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It had a previous name. It begins with an L, and I can't think of it right now.
I think this was Wilmington. But anyway, I did get that offer. And that's during the time I was going to these classes over there in reserves. And like I say, I didn't do that. Now, maybe if I'd have done that, maybe I would have been accepted for the promotion and kept going, you know. But as it turned out, why, that was the end of it with ROPA. So I was in there not long enough to be the 20-year man or anything like that. But so really, you start out in 42 and just went to 55.
Okay.
So it was only about 13 years completed.
So what did you do then, Ed, when you were completely terminated from
the service? I became a salesman. I wanted to get into sales. I liked being outside. Mm-hmm. And I was a salesman all the way through to so the latter years, and even the last few years, I wind up buying a paper route after I left as a salesman. Yeah, and that's how I finished up then. And Frank and Eddie used to help me on the paper route. We had a paper route then. Down here, it was a little bit different situation. Down here, you bought the paper route.
Okay.
And you were sort of like in business for yourself. Do you have anything to add, Frank? Anything that I forgot or whatever? Mm-hmm.
Did you stay in touch with very many people? You know, especially people from Manduria or the Pacific?
Not really, no. This Glenn Hacker, he was in the Air Transport Command all along, and we got acquainted when I got out there flying with the Air Transport Command. And we were pretty good buddies there. And it was funny, he always wanted to go into the motel business. And he wanted me to go into the motel business with him out there. And he'd go around pricing these different motels, you know. And he found out that you could build a motel for $1,500 a unit. I remember that. $1,500 a year, or a unit. And he wanted me to go into the business with him. And I don't want to do that. So we got to be pretty good buddy buddies. And outside of that, I guess I didn't keep in contact with anybody except a couple guys who were on the crew. I kept in contact with Mulholland and his wife.
And it was Magna. Carl Mulholland?
Carl Mulholland and Magna. I kept in touch with them. And then in 1977, I went down to visit them. And Mulholland and Magna met me at the airport. And there were some people that my wife used to live with. She followed me everywhere I went. And she'd always find some place to live. And we'd wind up with the nicest people, you know. And we wound up with some great people down in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And we just really got acquainted with them. We still keep in contact with them. So I did keep in contact with those people. But the funniest thing that happened, this one guy I lived with, he owned a barber shop down there. He didn't run the barber shop, but he owned it. And the people rented from him. And when I told the bank I was coming, he's in a barber shop and he's getting a haircut. And he says to this barber, he says, "Give me a good haircut." He says, "A buddy of mine, he says, I was in the Air Force with, he said, he's coming down to see me next week." And this other guy's sitting there. And he says, who's coming down to see you? And he told him. So he didn't even know I was coming. So then they all met me there. This guy and his wife and a whole bunch, they all met me there. But the wife always found different places to live. And of course, when we were in training, they wouldn't even let the wives come out to the base. In fact, they have a sign at a couple of the bases, I remember. It's out front, it says, "No cadets, dogs, or cadets' wives allowed on the base." And my wife got a job in the a bank in Hondo, Texas, because I was in training in Hondo. And they ran her out of town. They wouldn't even let her stay in the town. And she got a letter from somebody, she had to come back because she had this job in a bank, and they left her come back. She was pretty tricky. She did a lot of... we had one case here where we were traveling between one of the places by train, like from Pocatello to Mount Home or whatever, you know. And we get off a train and hear her and Gene Hayes are standing there. And boy, this guy was CO, he really got upset, you know, he was standing there. And she's wondering how in the hell they knew where we were going to be, you know. Mm-hmm. Here they followed him when he bought all the tickets. He must have got all the tickets. And they followed him and found out where he got the tickets bar. So they were waiting for us there, you know. And I remember one place they had all kind of rumors. "You're going here, you're going there," you know. My wife comes out and she says, "You're going so-and-so." I said, "How'd you find this out?" She says, "I found out in town." I said, "That's pretty damn good. It's a big secret on a base and everybody in town knows where we're going." I said, oh boy.
Can we talk a little bit more about Manduria? Okay. Back in Italy, you know, could you talk a little bit about the everyday life there? I mean, not just the missions, but what the quarters were like and the food they fed you and maybe any shows that you got to see, USO type things or other activities, how often you got off the base?
Yeah, we had we lived in a tent, and what we did.
This is how many men to a tent?
Four officers mm-hmm. to a tent, the enlisted men. I don't know how many enlisted men they had in a tent. I really can't tell you. I don't remember that part. But what we did, when I went over, the navigator had more equipment than anybody else had to take.
Right.
So since I had to take all this equipment, I took every doggone thing with me. I took a radio, I took a saw, I took a hammer. I had the whole works in there, you know. And in fact, to tell you something about this radio, I plugged this thing in Marrakech and the thing went kaput. I didn't realize the voltage over there. Uh-huh. It wouldn't work. So they finally put a station, broadcasting station, on the base. This was later on. And they start playing all our kind of music, and for some reason or other, I could get this music in that radio. So when I left there, some guy says, "Can I buy that radio from you?" And I said, "Hell, it's no good. All it gets is this music." He said, "That's all I want." So he bought the radio from me. But anyway, what we did, we took the tent, we put the sides up, and we built boards up. Mm-hmm. And we put boards up so high, and then we put netting to get up top of the tent. And we took and put a toggle switch on each. We each had a cot, four cots in there. We each put a toggle switch on there. And none of us were electricians. We wanted to put a toggle switch on, so after we got in bed and pulled the netting down over top of us, we could turn a switch off, you know. And we didn't know that you just cut into one side of the wire. We cut into both sides. I thought the tent was... Boy, the stuff melted off there. Some guy finally told us, you just cut into one side of the wire. You don't cut into both sides of the wire. So anyway, we did that. And then when I became a squadron navigator, then they moved me to a barracks. And in the barracks, I roomed with the flight surgeon.
Now, didn't Mandura used to be an old Italian army field?
Could be. I don't remember that part.
Okay. This was a wooden barracks?
Yeah, it was a wooden barracks. Number 10, I can remember that number better than that thing. And I roomed with the flight surgeon, Dr. Ostro was his name, and Kaywood was right across the hall. So Kaywood and I were pretty much buddy-buddy.
Kaywood was the 720th Squadron Commander.
He was the 720th Squadron Commander, yeah. He was the 20th Squadron Commander. And he used to have movies on the base. We'd get down there at nighttime. It was crazy. You'd go to watch a movie, and they'd start revving up the airplanes. And all the dust would fly across it. Probably you'd say, when you get home, they tried to do something like that to make you watch a movie. It raised all kind of heck. And the USO shows, I remember Joe Lewis, the boxer, come over one time and put on exhibition. And one time the
Who did he box?
I don't remember. I can't tell you. I remember Joe Lewis. I remember him being there.
You didn't take him on then?
No, I didn't try it. Neither did Ostro. And then he put on a USO group, put on a show one time. They were terrible. And there was some GI, and he was drunk. And he kept getting up on the stage. Another guy get up and pull him off. He was funnier than the whole team USO show that they had. Yeah, but that was, and then they had a boxing ring there. And we played basketball and touch football. In fact, I told you that story about Gideon.
Yes.
He claims he broke his arm.
Colonel Gideon.
He was the CO. He came in later as CO.
For the group.
Yeah, I think I just flew one mission with him. And then I flew with Snaith, who was the commander on that mission, Schwekot. And when these guys went down there to bring back the POWs, you know, on that mission that you said about Falconetti and him being on in Pulaski.
Yes.
They reported, the navigator kept a log, and he had everything in that log. Weather conditions, what kind of clouds were up there, cloud formations, and if a plane got shot down, how many guys got out. And they reported to me that there were no chutes got out of that plane with snakes. They said they got a direct hit on it and just went up in a ball of flames. And here they went in there to pick them up. They come back and they said, snakes down there. And I said, snakes down there? I said, yeah. And they said, what happened? They says they got a direct hit on the thing. And they says he was flying down through the air. And the next thing, when he became conscious, he was only a couple of thousand feet off the ground. And he pulled a parachute, you know, and he was kept in a POW camp. And what happened when the Russians were coming this way, and they wanted to get him out of there before the Russians got there. And somewhere or another, the guys in there got the word that the Russians were coming, and they got out, and they got him out of there.
Now, this was in Romania, in a POW camp?
I don't remember. I thought it was in one place, then somebody else said it was somewhere else.
That's what I've heard, but I'm not certain the location.
I don't recall either, but it had to be over that way somewhere, you know, Romania or somewhere in that area. But I don't remember exactly where that was at. Yeah.
Now, Snaith's